This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We get so horny for Tre'Mont Smith.
I do not regret that choice of words. I chose it purposefully.
We do?
As a fan base. Yes! Armani Watts really gets our heart pumping.
Who else is it?
Khalil McKenzie really gets our juices flowing here in Kansas City.
On Sports Radio 810. WHB.
To this day, I regret zero syllables of that liner because I think it's a pretty proper sort of summary of the mood I start getting into as we get to pre and post draft season, right in that sweet spot. And I think we're there right now. We're within a month of the NFL draft, and I do want to talk about what the Chiefs are going to do, especially the guys at the top of the roster, but I also can't help but always keep in mind that for the most part, Jehu Cheston, Ukeme Ligwe, and Leon McQuay aren't really moving the needle. Even then, years later, it's crazy. I actually think I brought this up in a group chat with Tucker D. Franklin, former intern, frequent guest of the show, and our next guest, Jordan Foote of Arrowhead Report. You can follow him on Twitter at footnoted. There's an E there. It's F-O-O-T-E, noted. It's a good handle. Don't think about it too hard. I think I mentioned this to both of them. Looking back at the 2017 draft, obviously Kareem Hunt had some extenuating circumstances. He's on an NFL roster, but... from the 2017 NFL draft, one member of that draft class is still on the Chiefs. And it's Patrick Mahomes. So, like, it worked out pretty well. But, man, it is an incredibly difficult and, I think, often fickle experiment to try to get a draft class correct. The Chiefs are going to have to do that at the end of this month. We'll talk about that now here with the aforementioned Jordan Foote. Jordan, how do you feel about the phrase, "We all get so horny for Tre'Mont Smith"?
I don't know how to feel about a lot of stuff that happens on this show, Josh.
Yeah.
I'm kind of speechless. I mean, I'm disappointed but not surprised, but also a little bit in awe. So feeling a little bit of everything, man.
I think that's completely fair. I am sort of curious how you – so here's the thing right now. If you're not following all of Jordan's work, you're not reading at arrowheadreport.com, Jordan is – honestly, what day are you on right now, Jordan? Do you even know?
I think I'm on day 80. It's kind of all a blur after about 25, so we're getting there.
Jordan is on day 80 or so, somewhere around there, of his 100 and 100 series, where for the 100 days leading up to the NFL draft, he is reviewing a prospect through the eyes of the Chiefs, through the fit of the Chiefs, every single day. One every day for 100 days, 100 prospects in 100 days, specifically scouting these draft prospects for the Chiefs. Some guys that might be there at 31, some guys that are going to be later round flyers, mid-round prospects, the whole gamut. It's an incredible project, and if you go to arrowheadreport.com, actually right now, it is the featured story. It is in that top spot, and if you click that main 100 players in 100 days draft guide page, it really is a draft guide at this point. You can scroll down, and you can control F and click around for whatever player or position you're looking for, and it's incredible. So with all that being said, Jordan, you are... deep into the scouting, you've gone through so many of these dudes, and still, and as the Chiefs are doing this, as every team in the league is doing this, still, there is going to be a top five pick that totally busts. There are going to be several top 10 and top 15 picks who underperform, especially once we get into these fourth and fifth and sixth rounds. There are going to be guys like a Legarius Sneed who end up leaping into a role and way overperforming their draft slot, and you're going to find guys who in the third round, like Colin Saunders, loses his job to an undrafted free agent who plays really well in his second year versus the UDFA's rookie year. I'm sort of curious, just at this point, going through this process and being so involved in everything draft related for so long now, how has your philosophy sort of evolved as in terms of what you can expect from players and teams, and how much of this is a science and how much of this is a little bit of a dart throwing game?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a crapshoot for the most part, but man, I think fit is really big with that. I mean, you get prospects who hopefully the teams draft players that fit their system. Every once in a while you get those exceptions. And then there are organizations like the Raiders who just kind of take a shot and no matter what, do their thing. But man, I think I was a little nice with the prospects at first, and I was kind of like, oh, this guy could be drafted here if things fall right. And then you stand on your left foot and recite the national anthem with your eyes closed, stuff like that. Like you could see them becoming a valuable contributor maybe in year three for the Chiefs, like really kind of sugarcoating everything. But that was like the first 20 days. And then I finally said, you know what, you just have to kind of call it like you see it. And like, not every player is going to be great. Not every player is going to fill a role in year one. I think that especially with the Chiefs having so many holes at the beginning of the offseason, people were like, oh, well, you can draft seven players and all seven of them can start week one right. and fill those holes, when you can't draft like that. Like if you're relying on seven unproven players or eight unproven or six or whatever the amount is to all step in and fill holes year one, let alone throughout the whole 4 years, then that's extremely risky and it's not going to work out. So kind of stepping back and saying, well, this player could step in day one and play well. This player needs a couple years. This player could sit for a minute or play in this scenario. Like you kind of have to look at everything from a bird's eye view, I guess, and kind of break it down that way.
I want to get into some of the specifics with a few specific guys and a few specific positions for the Chiefs. But one other kind of bird's eye view, I guess, of the whole process. Do you think that there's you say you think maybe fit is undervalued throughout these conversations? Is there anything that you think people fall into as a trap of you go, oh, well, you guys, you're seeing this, you're hearing this, and you end up putting too much stock there, and that leads into pitfalls? Is there something that's overrated in this process that jumps to mind?
Personally, I think the underrated things are definitely fit. And, like, you have to know the position. Like, to think that a fourth-round rookie wide receiver that can't run a full route tree is going to step in and do well in an Andy Reid offense, like, one of the hardest to learn in the NFL is rough. Or, like, can a undersized edge rusher step in and be an every-down player for Steve Spagnuolo when he may not fit all three of those key size parameters or whatever? Like, the Chiefs run very complex schemes that are difficult to learn, so they're not very rookie-friendly to begin with. And then I guess I didn't intend on bringing this up, but the arm length thing. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, I think that arm length is important to a degree. Teams definitely, like, there are a plethora, a multitude of things that could single-handedly knock a player off the team's board, like an injury concern or a character thing or arm length or weight or height or off the field stuff, whatever. But this is the year of the T-Rex for offensive tackles. And like a few months ago, I was feeling pretty confident that the Chiefs could get their quote unquote guy at some point. And then you look, all these guys have short arms. Like the ones that don't are going to go at the very top or aren't ready to play yet. So the Chiefs are going to have to be strategic, and they're kind of set in their ways, I think, a little bit. Like, people bring up the Mike Dana pick at the end of last year's draft in the fifth round or whatever. He didn't fit the Spags parameters, but, like, that's one out of however many or two out of however many that he's done. So the Chiefs are kind of going to do what the Chiefs are going to do.
I'm glad you mentioned the arm length thing, because it's something that I wanted to talk to you about and then forgot about, and then you mentioned it, so it worked out great. It's something that that Tucker wrote about, because he talked to Jim Mora Jr. about it a little bit and then wrote about it up on Arrowhead Report. I thought what Jim had to say was really, really interesting. I thought what Tucker was sort of putting out there was interesting. Can you kind of set that up a little bit more, go into a little more detail on, I guess, just sort of the conversation about specifically arm length for offensive tackles? What we're talking about whenever we talk about O-T-Rex season, and I think unfortunately I hate to do this, but I think that might be copyright of a dead to the show friend of the show whose name I will not recite on these airwaves.
All right.
But what fractions of measurements are we talking about, and then what is the concern, and then what do you think is actually, I guess, worth being concerned about? In terms of this dude's arms are too short to play tackle, but he could play guard, or you need to hit this certain benchmark as a tackle with arms this long to feel comfortable having this guy be the pick at 31 or this pick at 63. Because I think that's a conversation that's probably gone over a lot of people's heads, because it's really in the minutia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, like, fans of NFL teams and sometimes even scouts and stuff, they're conditioned to want to see tackles fail and move to guard before they've even played a down in the NFL.
Hmm.
And I'm going to use Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame as an example because he's someone that a lot of Chiefs fans are familiar with and mm-hmm. are kind of in that same camp of, oh, he can step in and play week one at left tackle. That was before his coach brought up that he may not be athletic enough to play left tackle, but that's another conversation that we can have here in a second. But
yeah, super weird.
It's the linemen that have short arms, the tackles that have short arms, it really allows those lengthy edge rushers to get into their chest, and it can drive them backwards. It makes it easier for them to stay engaged, or I guess disengage.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a lot more difficult for them. But, like, we're literally talking fractions of inches. And the Chiefs' Andy Reid tackles have, like, 34-ish inch arms. I wish I had the exact measurement off the top of my head. But
unfortunately, this is another – I'm just going to say his name, like, Voldemort once, because Tucker had to credit him in this story. So I do have the actual measurement here. Kent Swanson, RIP.
Yeah.
He said the average arm length of a tackle for Andy Reid is 34 and a quarter inches.
Okay. So then, like, you look at the guys who have 34 and a quarter inch arms in this draft, there's really not a lot. Like, we're making a big deal about guys who have 33 and a half inch arms, and that's, like, the high end of the spectrum in
right.
terms of arm. Like all of these guys have sub 33 inch arms, or, like, 33 and a quarter or 32 and 3/8 or whatever. It's hard to read those measurements and, like, the height measurements and stuff. Like, that four-digit thing is ridiculous. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but it took mm-hmm. me a minute to finally sit down and figure that out. But,
right.
it's something that literally only NFL scouts use, and that's it. But that's neither here nor there. The arm tackle or the arm length thing for tackles, it's just rough. Like, for a team like the Chiefs, where Jim Mora Jr. put it really well. Like, that's a great conversation up on ArrowheadReport.com with Tucker Franklin. Tucker did a good job, too, I guess. But
it was mostly, we can agree, it was really Jim carrying the water. But yeah.
Jim really carried a lot of the weight. He shouldered the load on that one. But he brought up, like, the guys who have redeeming qualities are worth making an exception for. And you can have a redeeming quality, but you can only build your team on so many exceptions. So, like, Liam Eichenberg, his redeeming quality is he's good. I mean, he's just an NFL-ready, like, fundamentally sound tackle, or a Tevin Jenkins is super strong, guys like that. There are certain guys who have athleticism, like Spencer Brown, he's a lengthy dude. Cosme's a lengthy dude. Those, if you're super, super strong, then it helps. Like, Jackson Carman is a guy that's brought up out of Clemson, where he protected Trevor Lawrence's blind side and did a pretty darn good job doing so, but he has really short arms. Like, I think they're 32 and 3/8, which is really suboptimal there. So you want to see him. Personally, I think those guys are worth trying at tackle and then moving inside the guard. But, like, how do you take guys, this is just me thinking out loud, who have built a career playing plus football and being positive contributors at tackle, and then saying, well, they have to play guard immediately at the NFL? Like, at least give them a shot. Now, it depends on the team fit and stuff like that, but the Chiefs are just going to have to take what they can get here, because, A, if they draft the tackle early, I think everyone can agree that preferably he would be sitting behind a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs haven't kind of made that move yet. And, B, if they get a guy late who isn't ready but has long arms, great. If they get a guy who is ready but has short arms, then, I mean, which one's better? That's just something they'll have to consider. But that 34 and a quarter is something that not too many guys in this draft have. I mean, that's just kind of how the cookie crumbled.
Yeah. I just think it's so interesting you said to be literally talking about an inch or a fraction of an inch, and that's
yeah.
the difference between what you project these guys to be at the pro level. Let's stick with the tackles here, just because, as you mentioned, it's still clearly the biggest void on this roster. They signed Austin Blythe, and you've got a center who can play there come opening day. Fine, great. We can talk about receiver and edge and more depth and more up, higher end talent. That's all fine. There's still not a left tackle on this roster right now, and I don't know if any of the arm length stuff, if any of the specifics of any of these guys, if Brian Kelly just telling the world that Liam Eichenberg's not going to be able to be a tackle at the NFL level, I don't know if that does anything for you, but we haven't talked about this in a couple of weeks here with you on the show. So how are you feeling right now about the crop of tackles at specifically left tackle for the Chiefs if they do end up getting to the draft? And you know, maybe Okung and Villanueva are still available at draft time, but if they get to the draft and they do not have a tackle on their roster, what do you think the best bet is for the Chiefs to fix that position?
I still think it's Eichenberg, man. I think that he's just a guy where he can step in, like, in terms of play style. I don't want to make the Eric Fisher comp, but in terms of, like, career trajectory, kind of a solid but unspectacular tackle, and those are underrated, especially at the protecting Mahomes' blindside spot. He has the short arms. There's guys like Tevin Jenkins, and man, I was in on Tevin super early in that process, but now everyone's kind of catching on to him, so I don't think he would be there at 31. Samuel Cosmi from Texas, he needs to sit. Jalen Mayfield from Michigan, I don't know if he's even a tackle. Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, I don't know if he's a tackle. So there are guys, like, you look in the middle rounds, I guess day two, like second or third. Walker Little from Stanford, he hasn't played in a couple years, really. Just limited experience and limited health. Brady Christensen from BYU, I've talked about him a lot. He's a tier two guy. You keep looking, like, I felt really, really good at first about the kind of crop of talent at tackle, and now I'm just kind of cooling on it because I think no matter what, the Chiefs, unless they get an Eichenberg, are going to have to sit that player for a year or so. Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa has the size parameters. He's another thing with those tackles is, like, I think athleticism is the main thing that keeps guys from going from right tackle to left tackle, and that's kind of what Brian Kelly, I guess, was talking about when he threw his own left tackle under the bus.
Right.
And said basically he didn't have the athletic chops to do it.
Yeah.
But Brown is a guy from Northern Iowa where, A, he needs to sit for a little bit, but he tested off the charts at his pro day, and he has the size. He's like 6'8.5", and his arms are long enough, so he'll satisfy the Chiefs there. He can move over to left tackle. So I think it just depends on the value, where the board falls, and kind of what they do in free agency. But like you said, Okung and Villanueva, they're still out there, and I think everyone would feel a lot better if they drafted a player to sit behind them for at least the 2021 season.
You guys went with Brown in the latest mock draft that's up on Arrowhead Report. You can also go to si.com/NFL/Chiefs, but arrowheadreport.com is way easier to remember. We all understand this. But you guys ended up taking, you and Tucker took Spencer Brown in the third round, kind of in the fictional situation of the Chiefs. I can't remember who you guys had him. You had him adding one of the tackles, and I believe AJ Bouye, who's no longer, like 2 hours after this article went up, I think he signed.
Yeah.
But, you know, such is life. But if they do sign a vet somewhere, I'll tell you what, whenever you get the little relative athletic score, little chart up, and the whole thing is just green, I want to bite because I can't help myself. Because get the freak athlete who could sit behind Villanueva for a year, maybe two, whatever. I love that. But the guy at the top of this draft, and the guy that you talked about also on the Roughing the Kicker podcast where you did this, you can hear Tucker does that every single weekday. Jordan's there, like, pretty much all the time. And you guys talked about Jason Owe, the edge from Penn State. And I thought honestly, whenever I was watching the video clip of you guys talking about him, the way you started talking about Jason Owe, I thought it was going to be you explaining why you did not have any particular interest in taking him at 31, but it ended up being more of a journey over the way your view of him has developed. Walk me through that a little bit and how your opinion on Jason Owe, the edge from Penn State, evolved a little bit over these last couple of months. Really, maybe really over these last couple of weeks.
Sure, yeah. It's really been these past 3 weeks or so, and he's a guy where he's easy to evaluate, but he's also extremely difficult to evaluate. Like, the production isn't there from a sack standpoint, but he had a bleep ton of pressures that he generated. Just a really productive player. If you kind of read between the lines and you can look and see, he's a guy where he's probably a year off from being that every down player. He doesn't set the best edge. And I think another thing with the Chiefs is, like, they have guys who can rotate in on third down, like a Taco Charlton, to rush the passer, but do they have someone who can be a run stopper, at least set an edge, like Mike Dana on downs one and two, or does the Jaron Reed signing push Chris Jones out there on early downs? Like, they're going to have to decide what they do in that regard, and I think Owe, man, like, especially early in the draft, because at the edge class, the athleticism drops pretty quickly in terms of the available pool. Always like the best athlete at that position in this class. He's absolutely fantastic, a world-class athlete. He has the size He's a few pounds underweight. Like, for people listening at home, the Spags, like, prototypical defensive end measurements, like 6'3" or taller, 33 or greater inch arms. So there's the arm length thing again. And then between 260 or 280 pounds, I might be a pound or two off on that range. But OA fits that for the most part. He's a guy where if you can get an elite athlete, I think the Chiefs have enough on first and second down with a guy like Dana or Jones to kind of not generate pressure with the case of Dana, but set the edge and play quality run defense. Then on third down, just unleash. I mean, you could have a OA, Reed, Jones, Frank Clark combo or sub Taco Charlton in there somewhere. Then a year from now, after you kind of bulk that guy up, and there are several guys like that in this edge class, kind of let them take over. But edge has been a need for a little bit, and it's not like this year or last year where people are like, oh, the Chiefs need a first-round corner or whatever. It's something that is a legitimate thing that I think they should upgrade. But it's hard to do when you need a wide receiver, you need a left tackle, you need an edge rusher, you need a safety looking forward to next year. Like, you can't just draft one year at a time. So OA himself would not only kind of help some stuff in the present, but I think future-wise, his ceiling is just off the charts.
It also just feels like a very Brett Veach pick. Like, I'm going to invoke a couple of names here that don't necessarily line up to success, but the pitch on Tano Passanio, and he was, I think he was 6'7", 6'8", something like that.
He's insane.
He specifically is a physical freak, which I mean in the kindest way possible. But the selling of Tano Passanio was essentially, hey, we're going to take a complete specimen outlier here and try to make him play the spot. And he was underwhelming for his draft slot. He's an NFL rotational defensive end. I think that the comparison to Breland speaks. He was not that athlete. He was not nearly as versatile as the Chiefs, you know, lined him up to be at one point where we didn't know what his position was, but he wasn't positionless in a positive way. But the thing that you said there that made me think of Breland speaks as well, other than just ideally being an edge, is after the draft and after the pick when the Chiefs traded up to draft him, Brett Veach talked about how he was like the last guy before the drop-off. And I don't know if there's anything that I would be more comfortable predicting in this draft than the fact that I believe the Chiefs are going to find someone within that first or maybe that second tier of edge prospects where they are not going to leave with no shade to Mike Dana. He's a developmental dude of a different class. Yeah. I think they're going to have somebody in those first 63 picks where they say, hey, we really think this. He's probably not starting this year, but our plan is for someone that we draft here at edge to be starting opposite Frank Clark or perhaps in Frank Clark's spot in 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of think, could that come in the form of a trade back from the first round, which I think – that hasn't been Veach's MO. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's traded up several times, but never traded back. But the Chiefs are going to have to start hitting on their early draft picks. That's something that they haven't been able to do recently. Yeah. They've found some quality depth in like L'Jarius Sneed and Rashad Fenton and guys like Nick Allegretti, guys like that. And like, I'm just going to say this quickly because I keep seeing it on Twitter. You can't call those guys busts when they're day three picks. Like, Rashad Fenton is not a bust. Nick Allegretti is not a bust. They are reliable contributors and depth pieces. And a lot of those guys that get drafted on day three don't make teams or don't make it off teams in a couple years or whatever. So those are important, but the Chiefs really need to find some quality productivity in the first few rounds on days one and two. And this draft has a lot at edge at the top. I mean, there are some guys that won't be there or don't fit the Chiefs when they pick, but if they trade out of that 31 spot, that opens up some options for tackles. If they don't like the board, they could take a receiver, they can take an edge. They could also move up from 63. I mean, I think those first 60 picks are going to dictate the future of the Chiefs. Like, I know they're going to get some cool value stuff later in the draft, but what they do in the first three rounds is going to be absolutely huge in terms of their success, not only now, but also in the future.
I think the other position that we haven't mentioned yet that is probably likely to show up somewhere in that range, or if not in those first three picks, shortly thereafter, is at the receiver spots. It's an interesting place for the Chiefs to be picking here, because there are a handful of guys, I think, that you say, oh, you know, if they fell to 31, that'd be hard to turn down, even as the Chiefs have big needs at tackle and edge. There eventually end up being some questions about some of the dudes that would be there maybe closer to 60, and I don't know. I've seen a couple of names that eventually get tied to the Chiefs that I'm not super stoked about. And then there are some that think, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But can he step into a Sammy Watkins-like role? And if so, how long would it take? We talked about Juju Smith-Schuster a lot on tonight's show. The Chiefs were clearly very, very in on him. How do you feel about the receiver class and the different tiers within it? Because it seems like it's deep. But whenever you start getting to deep, you do start getting even farther into the uncertainty and probably a slower developmental process in terms of getting into Andy Reid's offense. Please correct me if I'm wrong, wherever I'm wrong, because I'm sure I'm wrong somewhere.
No, you nailed it. You hit the nail on the head there. And the question is, can he X?
Yeah.
That's what people ask, basically, with every receiver. Can he be that X receiver? Does he have the body type? Does he have the route-running chops? Does he have the brain to do it? And there have been some guys who were in that 6 foot, 6 foot one range, like Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. He's like my guy to the max. I love Bateman from Minnesota. He's going to be a fantastic pro. He has shrunk every year from his senior year of high school. Like, he's gotten a half inch shorter every year and then about 5 pounds lighter. So he went to his pro day after being listed at about 6'2", 210.
Mm-hmm.
He's like almost basically 6 foot 190, which is, I mean, that's a fair difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the Chiefs need a close to 6 foot, like preferably 5'11 or taller guy who's probably 190 pounds or bigger, who can run routes, who can get underneath the field. Not literally, obviously. That'd be pretty cool if they could do that. If they could get underneath the field and somehow pop back up, that would be maybe that's Andy's trick play, but
I think Monty Mole in at least Mario Baseball, I think, could do that. So that would be great.
Yeah. So if the Chiefs could get a guy like that in this draft, that's kind of that unicorn type player, then fantastic. But a guy who can run underneath routes and get open, kind of just fill that Sammy Watkins role, be reliable, catch slants, do stuff that, no offense to Mecole Hardman, that Mecole Hardman doesn't do. I mean, he is a deep threat, a slot guy, a gadget guy. And he can be good in that role. But when you have two guys who are clearly sub 6 feet tall, who are like 180 pounds, like Tyreek Hill's listed, I think, 5'10". I'm not sure I buy that. Like, I don't think Tyreek Hill's 5'10". He might be closer to like 5'8 or 5'9".
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a difference. When you have two out of your three top receivers who are that size, it makes you rely on someone who's bigger to be that X-style receiver. So there are guys like Bateman who are going to be there. Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU. I've kind of cooled on him. I was never a big fan. But that second round, like 60, I guess 50 to 70 range, these guys seem to be really rising up draft boards. Amon-Ra St. Brown from USC is a name going around. Dyami Brown from North Carolina. There is value to be had. Even on day three, there are guys, even Josh Palmer from Tennessee. Like, if you look at different websites, these guys are ranked in the hundreds. The thing with the COVID kind of draft process, I think, and with limited information and stuff out on certain guys, I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these guys go like day two, like round two. Like, it's just a weird thing where it's a huge cluster of guys where you don't know exactly where they're going to go, but you just kind of see how they fit with the Chiefs. And if the Chiefs overdraft someone who clearly fits their system but might be a little rough around the edges, that's okay.
Yeah.
Clearly, DeMarcus Robinson is going to have a phenomenal season based off what he's saying. And you can't blame the guy for being that confident and excited to kind of have that opportunity. But if the Chiefs are getting 1,000 yards from DeMarcus Robinson, I would personally be surprised. I just don't think he is that type of receiver. But if they do draft one in the first three rounds and then kind of have that de facto X production and mix in, they're going to have some depth still. It's not like Sammy Watkins was a 16-game player,
right,
nor completely healthy for the Super Bowl. So there are ways that the Chiefs can kind of make stuff happen. I think this is a really, really good year to need a wide receiver.
Well, they do, and I hope they end up with one that's exciting. And it's a good point on all the COVID, the ways that COVID will impact all of this, right? I hope, because I think chaos is fun, that we're going to see some curveballs that are going to surprise us a little bit, where you might see guys higher up or lower down on the board for certain teams that ends up throwing a wrench in the system. By the way, also, the earlier we see that happen in the draft, the better it is for their spot at 31. If they have guys going off the board early that we didn't necessarily think were going to go, then maybe it ends up opening the door for some of these positions of need for the Chiefs a little bit later on. Jordan, always excellent to talk to you. If you want to hear more from Jordan, here's what you can do. You can go subscribe to the Ref and the Kicker Chiefs podcast, hosted by our own Tucker D. Franklin, and Jordan's there, like I said, pretty much all the time. It's just pretty much all the time. Also, literally all the time, literally every day, up until the draft, a new scouting report at arrowheadreport.com. 100 players in 100 days from Jordan Foote. You can also follow him on Twitter, at footnoted, FOOTENOTED. Did I miss anything, Jordan? I mean, you also do, like, NBA stuff, but I'm really narrowcasting right now. We're going Chiefs draft stuff. We're going Chiefs Jordan right now.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are the most important thing, especially considering that audience. So you definitely hit everything.
Great.
And you can take full credit for that Twitter handle. It was all your idea.
I want credit for it until I say it out loud and realize I do still need to spell it, and then I feel like I've let you down. So that's the dichotomy of man. Thank you, Jordan. We'll talk again sometime before the draft, I imagine, or right after it, whenever we try to figure out whatever it is the Chiefs end up doing.
Yep, thanks a lot, man.
Follow him on Twitter, at footnoted. I came up with the handle, even though you have to mention every time there's an E in the middle. It's like the word footnoted, but there's an extra E after the T, but before noted, you get it. It's not that complicated. While we're talking to Jordan, the Royals game went final. It was delayed by rain, and then it was exclusively pain. They got shut out. Was it 6-0 final?
Yes, 6-0. Yes.
I don't know what Mike Matheny is going to tell us, but it's been two rough starts from Brad Keller in a row to start his 2021 season.
But better this time.
I mean, it would have been hard for it to have been worse. His ERA was 1 billion after the first outing. It's now lowered
it's
to
now just about 100 million.
A nice round 100
That's
million.
Improvement.
They didn't score a run in this game. I'm starting to wonder if Michael A. Taylor maybe isn't going to win MVP, if Nicky Lopez isn't an MVP candidate. I'm nervous.
I understand the frustration. You're just attacking the wrong people here.
I mean, that's probably. Well, it's just that those are the guys that I. Listen.
Just because no runs were scored doesn't mean Michael Taylor didn't hit like three home runs tonight.
But so here's the thing. My Nicky Lopez jersey hasn't even gotten here yet.
Mm-hmm. He made a great defensive play.
And my Michael A. Taylor tattoo isn't even healed yet. So I'm just a little nervous, is
you're
all
fine.
I'll say.
You're
I'm
fine.
Nervous that maybe
you're
I
fine.
Jumped on the bandwagon too hard.
No, you're fine.
It really does itch, though.
You're fine.
The tattoo.
Yeah, that's. You probably want to get that checked out.
Can you scratch? No, it's just itchy. It happens on tattoos. Isn't it under the? You know, it's clean. I got it done at a reputable place. It just says what number is he? It's just his
five.
Number, and it says Taylor, and it's on my back. Can you? Whenever we take a break, can you scratch this for me? Can you reach? I can't reach. Rudy, I can't reach.
I got a glass in front of me.
We're going to take a break. I'm going to need one of you guys to scratch my back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
The attempted illusion that the Royals would create that, oh, this is a team that can contend. Hey, we're raised royal and forever royal and taking the crown. This year is just going to be like, don't strain your butt.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
No! Rudy, we're back. We're back from break. I heard you shouting. I couldn't hear what you were saying. We are back from break. Put on your headphones.
We lost. So it's hard to know because we obviously have a light that says
on air.
But it always says on air, so
yeah.
I have no way to know.
Hey, Beards.
And
remember,
Beards didn't yell, hey, coming back from break.
Yeah, that's fine. I almost did, and this song started playing. Hey, Beards, you know the conversation we were having earlier about things that really do annoy us, even though we joke about them?
Mm-hmm.
I really wish you'd turn off the microphones during the breaks fully.
Because then I don't know if we're in break or not. We're just always on air. But
listen, sometimes these buttons are sticky and they don't come on all the way.
No,
so
you just don't push it.
No, but
you just don't push it.
But turn them off. And then you can turn them on, with the liner playing. Because whenever the liner's playing, I'll know not to say one of the potty words. But during the breaks, I'm going to assume that I could say a potty word if I really need to. And, like, if I, you know, need to say poopy or doo-doo or whatever. Boy, this one's tough.
Really? You think this one's tough?
No, because
this is bad.
Here's the thing is I think this one's, like, actually, like, 5 minutes of work away from being, like, kind of a vibe. But it's also really bad. What were you saying as you were walking back in, Rudy?
Good news is I was informed that Michael A. Taylor has been lost to the shower, so there was plenty of time.
Oh, my God!
Exact words.
is
so
this Monster House?
There was time to save, so Beer's Mike Matheny is saved. You'll have to obviously just kind of like clean up a little of the front, a little the back.
And you'll have to turn this off.
No, I can open up another Kukulata file.
No, I thought that you didn't.
No, I can do
that. No, you can turn it off.
Yeah,
it's
you
like, played his butt music. I get it. We get it. You did it.
Yeah, you can open another cool app file, but then as you edit, like, we're just going to hear the editing over the air.
Yeah, and also, we get it. We get it. You know, you did it. You did the thing. Oh, it's very funny. You did good work, Beard.
There's still 4 minutes to left.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe you, and yes, there is, and I'm sure it's great or horrible or whatever you want me to say to get you to turn it off. Do you have Swanee, I imagine, saying the phrase Michael A. Taylor was eaten by the showers or whatever?
I don't know if I had started recording. All right, I think I was saving Brad Keller in that process.
Well, the Royals could use someone to save Brad Keller.
I was recording the video, so we got it.
All right, so you would hop in there later and edit it up. Okay,
we got
great.
It.
Excellent. No, but seriously, like the Royals, somebody needs to save Brad Keller. And I don't think he did it.
From the showers?
From himself.
Maybe the showers too? Maybe that's the problem?
Brad Keller's ERA right now through two starts is 19.29.
It's better.
It is better than it was. He got through 3 1/3 tonight. It was. And by the way, this is a tough spot for a pitcher. I totally understand this also. A rain delay makes things even more to work on. It's not like he started and then got delayed. The start time just got moved back. But still not great. But he gave up 4 earned runs in the 3 1/3, or who's credited with them, I actually don't know if any of those. Third was scoreless. Fourth was scoreless also. So a 3-run first inning, gave up a run in the second, and then eventually got yanked. Kyle Zimmer came in, pitched pretty well. And I did see a little bit of Josh Staumont. He came in and pitched almost too full.
Throwing heat, as he does.
I must have blinked and missed this because we were doing a show, but Carlos Hernandez got one out and gave up 2 earned runs and 3 hits.
I didn't realize he was the pitcher. Like, I had it up, but I didn't realize like he was the guy in. But yeah,
not a great outing by him. But Staumont came in and cleaned it up, and I looked up often enough to see the man bun and then absolute gas coming out of his hand. Like, you know what? That's good to watch.
That's a Staumont.
But it was a tough night across the board. This was one of those instances where the Royals came out of the gate against the Rangers with a 14-run game and an 11-run game, won both of those. Lost game 3 to the Rangers, won the first game against Cleveland, then lost the second one. Now they lose their first game of a series for the first time this year, getting pretty well throttled by the Chicago White Sox. No runs scored. Lance Lynn got through the entire game.
Complete game shutout.
11 strikeouts, no runs allowed. Woo!
Yeah, he was good.
Woo!
Pretty good.
Every single starter in the Royals lineup was struck out by Lance Lynn at one point tonight. Hansel Alberto and Kim Gallagher, who both, Alberto never got a bat. Gallagher got one. They didn't strike out. The 9 starters all did, though. So Lance Lynn was on it tonight. The Royals offense could not get anything going, and they started off in a 3-0 hole after another really rough start there for Brad Keller. Let's hear what the manager of the Royals, Mike Matheny, had to say when he spoke to the media just a minute ago.
Hey, Skip, what stood out, or what did you see with Brad there? Was it just a matter of trouble locating a couple of sliders, or did you see more than that?
To me, he never really established his fastball, and he looked like he had good life, he had a couple slow pitches that got him early, and then never really found the bottom of the zone with the fastball to build the other pitches off of.
Danny? Hey, Mike. Did you see Brad kind of settle down there later? I know he was, his pitch count was a little bit higher, but it seemed like he was able to get some ground ball outs.
Yeah, and he did a little bit, but then it got to that point where we had to try and keep it within range. Thought he was making better pitches than the walk. Just kind of put us at that point. We're ready to get Zim, give him a chance to help us. I thought Zimmer did a fantastic job coming in when he did, picking up those middle innings for us.
Josh?
Mike, a thought on Lance Lynn. Maybe gave you a base runner there in the fifth with Salvador Perez, but outside of that opportunity, tough tonight.
Very tough. And, you know, we talked about establishing a fastball. He certainly did that. And, you know, really only threw one slow pitch at Taylor rifled into right field. Besides that, it was hard sink, hard cut, trust movement. I think that's probably a lot like the conversation that we've already had with Brad. He's got the ability to predominantly use that pitch and use the other pitches off of it. He's just got to trust it a little bit more. Like, and we saw the guy on the other side, he trusted it today.
Lynn again.
And Mike, with Staumont, what did you see with him? And do you feel like you're seeing signs that he's getting closer to where he wanted to be? I mean, I know he talked, you know, in camp about sort of getting that late start and being set back a little bit. Do you see him getting closer to where he feels like he should be at?
Yeah, today was huge. We needed to see a couple outings and try and make sure whenever guys have a little bit of a slow start and they don't feel like their strength's all there, we got to be careful. And so we've tried to be careful with Josh, but he keeps answering any questions that we have about his strength and ability to go. He looked great today, and that's a very good one to build off of. He's going to be a big piece of what we're doing.
Annie, looks like last one for Mike.
Yeah, Mike, are you concerned it's anything more than just the command in establishing his fastball with Brad?
No, this is a guy that I believe is going to be his way through that first game for us. We believe that he's going to be the pitcher that we know he can be. And we watched signs of that all through spring training. Never want to get too far ahead of yourself. Right now it's two outings that didn't go anything like how he wanted them to go. He's going to have to make those adjustments and jump right back in there. But even as I told him as he was walking off the mound today, we've got all the faith in the world in you. You're going to get this figured out, and you're going to come back here, and you're going to lead this staff. And that's exactly what I want him to lead.
Lynn, last one.
Yeah, Mike, I just wanted to check with Salvi coming out there late. Was that just to get Galley a little an AB and some time, or was there anything happened there with him?
Galley hasn't been on the field yet. You need to get in there anytime. Just we talk about a lot of our pitchers. Anytime we can save them some work, Salvi's going to be the same. He and Whit both right there. Get Alberto in a game, but Galley needed to be on the field. Ended up needing to get in that bat, and any inning we can get for Salvi, we'll get him.
There's Mike Matheny after the game, just speaking to the media just a little bit ago. Obviously, Brad Keller. Well, we'll talk to David Leske here in 10 minutes, by the way, of Inside the Crown. He'll join us, and we'll talk to him about Keller and everything else we saw tonight, plus also some more big-picture stuff that he has written about on Inside the Crown. I'll talk to him in 10 minutes. We will try to bring you Brad Keller on the other side of this break, though, to hear from him, because obviously it's two games. It's still a very small sample size. It's the beginning of the year, all of that. All of those things I think are important and valid qualifiers. Mm-hmm. And also, totally fair to say right now, if you're a little bit concerned about the start of the season for Brad Keller, that would also be really reasonable. I think at this point, it might be the biggest negative. It probably is the biggest negative storyline from this first week and change of the Royals season. So take a break. Whenever we come back, we will try to bring you Brad Keller, and we'll talk to Leske here about him in about 10 minutes.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I wonder if we could like set up an elaborate role play scenario where we would just call in and give your best post game question, and then I would be Ned Yost and try to answer them as well as I could.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Talk about Soria's performance there in the third.
Don't ask me a talk about question! I'm bleeping Ned Yost!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beards can't manage us going a couple minutes past the hour so he can play Brad Keller in this, its entirety, but he will play this abomination as if now he does in fact care about the confines of radio.
I still don't understand that whole thing, but do we want to talk this out? I don't know what else we're going to talk about. Do you have something?
It's really strange to me where Beards does and doesn't respect the confines of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
Because listen, disrespecting, you know, like some of the crusty old cookie cutter sort of things, that the tropes that sports radio is defined by, I enjoy. And Beards plays this.
I missed some of the conversation because I was getting Michael A. Taylor.
Out of the shower. Did you get him out of the shower? Did somebody save him?
Yeah, he was saved from the shower. Did he say he needs 3 minutes to cut the commercials? Because, like, I would do it. It would take me, like, 15 seconds.
Well, as was foreshadowed in our conversation with Jordan Foote, sounds like Rudy and Beards is about to measure arms. Another thing that Beards hates, these meta conversations. He hasn't even gotten close to hitting his microphone button.
It's true. Sometimes when I was doing the Border Patrol, we'd have 2-minute breaks, and I'd get a whole segment saved, and a caller called.
You're a superhero.
Or a guest called. I mean, it's just, I think you could do it, Josh.
Well. Well, you're the intro today, right?
Yeah, fair point.
I think I'm in the right chair.
Fair point.
At the very least, it should be somewhere in this room. Because I'm just going to try to play Vanilla Ice saying Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then I'm going to break the entire system. Now the question is, will Beards get to that line within 10 seconds?
Nope.
A true quest of production brilliance. Will he get there? David Lesky's next.
Hey, what's up? This is Vanilla Ice, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.